you can tell everybody. You can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Test.
Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the known world, listening to this show live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Henson, and we are here for all of your community, mental health, love, attachment, relationship, and relational needs, and everything else in between. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, we'd like to thank Marsh University as well as WMUL for providing us with this platform to talk about mental health issues, community issues, relationship issues, and attachment issues. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, ideas, or perspectives that you hear on this show are not represented or representative or supported by Marsh University or WMUL, are not supported by any of their sponsors, affiliates, or sponsors, but these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, getting started, take this advice at your own risk. And while this, some of this may be therapeutic, this is not what, sir?
It's not therapy. Very important for you to know that we are not acting in a therapeutic role. This is not the couch. You're not paying. This is not billable. So take the information. We do hope it's useful, but if you want to go see a therapist, get a therapist, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly, exactly. So again, we are here. We are a synergy of intellect, information, with just a dash of comedy involved. So here we are. How you doing, my brother? How is sunny California treating you? Just a smidgen.
Oh, yeah. Things are relatively good over here.
We got a little bit of snow today, which was a surprise, but...
Yeah, that's what I heard. Man.
Yes.
Spring or snow in April.
Yeah, I guess we'll have
don't
to.
Don't miss it.
We'll miss it. We'll have to have a global warming conversation at some point, I guess. No, but things are well. Things are well. This has been an eventful last few days. It has been an emotional last few days for everybody, and we're talking about, as you all know, and a part of what we will talk about today, and it may be the whole show, maybe part of the show. We don't know. We'll just rock and roll and see what we feel and where the spirit takes us. But we thought that it's important for us to some degree, to address the Chauvin verdict. And for those who don't know, Chauvin was the law enforcement officer who kneeled on George Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes. And he was found guilty on all three counts. So we thought today, doing what we do, what this show is about, we thought it'd be important just to sort of think through and talk about some of the issues, our reactions, our responses, how we feel other people have reacted and responded. I don't know if, not necessarily to get closure, I don't know if closure can ever become, if we can ever get closure from something like this, because someone died, someone lost a loved one. So I don't know if closure, but it's good to discuss these things and talk about these things to try to get an understanding, hopefully. a deeper understanding, a better understanding, a different level of understanding. So, what were your thoughts, Dr. Chapman, when the verdict came down? What were your feelings? What were your emotions? What did you think?
Well, you know, I think it's a, this whole situation for me is a very complex and hard situation. And I just want to remind the audience that what you're listening to here are two humans, right, with intersectional identities, two Black males, two psychologists, two educators, and the list goes on and on. And I think these conversations, or this particular conversation, it's always, for me, it hits a chord. And the verdict, it's interesting when I process it myself and think about the reactions. You know, there's talk about how it's justice, people being excited. And I guess my gut reaction when I saw the verdict was like, oh, because I somewhat expected that it wouldn't go that way. Why? Because it hasn't went that way in a number of other cases. And I think one of the things that, and it's hard for me even to go with others right now because I'm just on myself. I'm in my feelings a little bit, y'all. So you have to roll with me today. But like, I was when this first came out, and I was appalled by the situation overall, one side of me. And then the other side of me is like, this is not new. And then I was even more appalled by, not that it's not good that people are doing things about it, but people are referencing this George Floyd incident like as if they just discovered this, as if there wasn't some long history of this, as if this doesn't have origins that goes all the way back 400 years in this country. Like, to me, that was like, it was hard. It doesn't take away what the awareness has done for a number of people and maybe what it might do to help, I don't know, I won't say stop racism, but make people more aware. But the fact that people were so unaware,
it's scary.
It just really gets me. And then with the verdict, the part of my side that is not as hopeful as I would like it to be, I generally think of myself as a somewhere in the middle of the road when it comes to hope, is like, okay, how long will it be before this will be a conversation that's supposed to be stunted? So I kind of like, even when you said earlier, there's no real closure because George Floyd family lost him. And then not to mention all the people that it's kind of re-triggering for other people that have experienced something like this in their life. In addition to that though, I think that there's some expectation that now that that's been done, we can move on. And I sent you a little clip earlier. I'm gonna tell the audience about it. So it was I don't remember exactly where it happened. It was a young boy on a bus route running to catch his bus, Black boy, running to catch his bus, and his mask was off his face a little bit. And the bus driver said to him, "Put your mask on." He says to the bus driver, "Well, I couldn't breathe." Bus driver says to him, white female bus driver, "Oh, that's what everybody's saying now because of the George Floyd situation. That's what you all say." And that little incident, though I know it was one person, I think to me highlights how I feel a number of people will feel about it. Like, okay, it's over now. Stop talking about it, or don't use it as an excuse for these other things. And so I'm really struggling with it. It's not... another thing that comes to mind, I was watching something that Ricky Smiley did, and it was after the incident that happened with his name is Dwayne Wright in Minnesota. And he was talking about, you know, how just walking, how when you're walking as a Black male, maybe some people get it because they've experienced things like it. Some people just can't get it because that's not something they have to live. But let me try to give it to you so you can understand if you don't have to live this experience. I have a dog. And so many people probably have dogs. Maybe you have a big dog. Maybe you have a pit bull. Maybe you have some dog that people are generally afraid of because of the way they look like. And so if you're a dog owner, what you get accustomed to, especially if your dog is friendly, is letting people know when you're walking your dog, hey, hi, you know, oh no, he's friendly, she's friendly, won't hurt you, you know, and that's just what you do. You know that you want people to feel comfortable around your dog. Your dog really didn't necessarily do anything. They just look menacing because of the stereotypes and stuff that people are going to put on your dog. And I have that because I have a dog. My dog's pretty big and he just happens to be a black dog also, but he looks sort of like a pit bull. So it's kind of like people look at him and are afraid, and I have to do that. And I think that's what people need to understand. This is going on. So it's like, in a lot of cases, the feeling is, I won't speak for everybody, that we're considered to be a threat or guilty before anything else. And that's part of the issue for me.
You said a lot there that I agree with. I think when it came down, I think, like you, this notion or idea, as if this hasn't, that's the thing, this isn't something new for us because we live it and we breathe this experience. We know what it's like when you're driving and a cop tailgates you, not because he wants to pull you over, but he's running your tags for no particular reason. Like, we have these experiences that other people of other cultures may not have. And this is our life. These are the lives of our uncles and our fathers and our grandfathers. Like, the idea, as if this is something new. And it just highlighted how very segregated and separated our lives really are and continue to be. I think there are other people of other cultures who really are lost. They really don't know. And I don't think that makes you racist or prejudiced or anything. We lead drastically different lives. And I think that I think sometimes what people of other cultures, and particularly white people, may not understand is you could conceivably live a life and never know anyone black intimately. You could live a life and never work with anyone black, never have a black neighbor, never have a black friend, never go to church with anybody black. And because our lives are so segregated and can be so segregated, a lot of these issues, people are, they just assume because their friends have a couple of black, you know, they're black kids at my kid's school. We go to the mall. We all go to the same malls. We all use the same restrooms. We interracially date. There is no problem. We've had a black president, which I'll get to in a second. From their perspective, it truly feels like, I just did a consulting thing at Eastern Washington University a couple of weeks ago. Shout out Dr. Clark. And the topic that I led with was Two Americas. And the question, I moderated a panel and we talked about, are there two Americas? And that's how this happens. Like, so I think what scared me, as you, it reminded me of President Obama. And when he got elected, everybody threw their hands up and said, see, he's been a black president. What are y'all complaining about? It's over. And I think what scared me about this was when he got convicted on all three counts, which I was surprised. And I wonder if we always hope for the best, but we prepare for the worst, because we've seen the worst happen over and over again. Over and over and over again, we've seen, from our perspective, the worst happen. So I was already ready for a hung jury or whatever. And then there was a part of me that was like, maybe we're in a space and a place and a climate that something's got to happen. But when he got convicted, I was afraid that people will say, just like with President Obama, it's over. You know, why are y'all complaining? You've had a black president. Everybody's going to say, see, the system works. And you got one dude. That's not the system. And that's not to say that I wasn't relieved for the Floyd family. I was relieved, and there will never be relief for that family. He will never hold his grandkids. He will never play with his children again. There's no relief for that family. But I was like, at least to some degree, he was held accountable. But it doesn't speak to an entire system that still needs to be spoken to. And to be clear, nobody's talking about abolish the police. That, and this is just my opinion, that is ridiculous, okay? We need the police. That is a job that I do not want. I don't even know, and that's another show for another day. I don't even know if that's a job that's that any human, that's humanly possible for anybody to have sometimes. But that's what scared me most, is people will say, well, look, they got him. The system works. And they don't understand, for every Chauvin, there are 1,000 other people. For every George Floyd we catch, there are 1,000 other brothers that get beat down on a daily basis that you never see. They get pulled over. For every one you see, there are 1,000 that you never see. There are 1,000 times that a camera is never there. And that is what I think people of color are trying to help people understand, who don't live this life, who don't experience this. These things are happening so much and so often that we look at them as common. We speak about these things as common. Like, when they happen to us, how do we respond to each other as black people? Well, that's just the life of a black man. Like, we have to learn to live with these things.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things to think about and try to help people digest and chew. Going back to the system conversation, first of all, I have much respect for police officers. I think that it's to some degree, when you're in the military, you grow respect for that kind of form. And not to mention that, you know, my parents are some form of law enforcement, correctional officers and whatnot. So I have respect for it. But there could be good people in the system.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the system is working properly the way it's supposed to work. I think that even if you look at, you know, one of the stories that I think is real sad, that if you don't know about, you should definitely look up, people that are listening, is the Khalif Browder story. But what I think is even sadder about than the story is that I shared it as assignments with some of my students, and some of the comments I get are, they have to have discussions about it. Some things that happen in discussions. So if you don't know the story, Khalif Browder was arrested for supposedly stealing a backpack, and then put into Rikers prison, ended up being like 3 years, ended up doing a ridiculous amount of time in solitary confinement. And the sum of it is, he ended up being in that situation without actually going through a formal charge, because he couldn't afford bail and no one in his family could afford bail. And so that resulted in him being in an adult prison. While he was in prison, he suffered a physical abuse from the inmates and from the correctional officers, which led to severe mental health problems and ultimately to him taking his life. So the whole story is just unfortunate. And there's so many points in that story that are part of a systematic problem. Bail, one. Right. And how many people in poverty, and this just in particularly affects more people of color, but poverty also, who can't afford to post bail, you know, if it's $10,000 and it's a percentage that you post. Most people wouldn't be in that colleague broader situation if they have money, because they can afford bail, regardless if he did it or not. But what gets to me is that when we have that conversation, there's no proof really throughout the story. And he was finally let go because there was never proof that he did it. But the thing that students get stuck on sometimes is, well, but we don't know he didn't do it. And this is what comes back to this whole situation. The assumption is guilty. You're guilty if you're a certain color. If you happen to be a black male, at least this is how I feel and experiences I've seen, then you're guilty until you're proven innocent. That's how you start. So when you see these things in the news, well, these situations with law enforcement, the arguments get so heated because people that are on the outside of the minority basically assume, well, he probably did something wrong. So if he did something wrong, he should have just comply, or he should just, you know, he did something wrong that probably started this whole process. Even if it's not a big something wrong, it's probably a little something wrong that started this. And then in some cases, it's probably the bigger something wrong. It's him that's the problem. But there are also cases like that colleague broader story where it wasn't the problem at all. In my opinion, I know people might disagree with me. He was just stopped and frisked. And more likely to be considered a criminal because of the way he looks.
I think that for me, quick station identification. Station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. This is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. Again, we're here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, and attachment needs. And today we're talking about the Chauvin. We're giving our responses and reactions and thoughts and perspectives on the Chauvin verdict that went down. I lost my thought. I think, though, for me, I lost my thought. What was the last thing you said?
Yeah, I was talking about how I struggle with us as black males being presumed as being guilty. And then the thing I think that makes it easier for people to absorb problems with the police is that, well, he must have done something wrong. I was pointing to that colleague broader story because it's my belief they didn't do anything wrong. And he was arrested simply because he looked like he fit the part. He was criminalized.
Yeah.
And then the deeper part of that is if you go to the history, I know people don't want to talk about it. Like if you go to the history and you look at right after the Civil War, Reconstruction, there were blatant campaigns in our society and the media and the way it existed then to criminalize black people, particularly
I think,
people.
Real quick, and I remember my point, but the point is this, those are stories. It's kind of like when I speak to my kids and I tell my kids stuff, experiences I've had, experiences family members have had, those feel like stories to them. They don't feel real. And they feel like they were a long time ago. Like, Dad, that's ancient history. Like, they don't understand. Like, my grandmother's mother was a slave. Like, they don't understand that kind of... It feels like a long time ago. We're talking about three generations. That's why whenever I talk about stuff, I talk about stuff from generations. Like, yeah. People to people. I never talk about a timeline. I know you'll never hear me say, like, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, because people don't get that. It feels like a long time ago. So I'll say, like, my grandmother experienced this. And she's still alive, and I just spoke with her. That seems to hit home with people.
I think that's the other part that's sad, because it's not that long ago. I mean, I was talking about slavery, but you could think about eugenics happened in the 1970s when they're sterilizing people, poor people, people of color. Yeah. But in addition to that, the other thing that people will be willing to admit is that when it's old wealth, it came from generations. Where do you think poverty is coming from in some states, in some situations? Generations. Where this idea of criminalizing black people is part of a system, and that system has lived and changed its ways that it does this.
If you just act right, though. If you just act right. If you just comply, if you just act right, if you don't do anything wrong. See, this gets us into an entire conversation about we have this relationship between free will and environment.
Yeah.
And can your environment push and poke and prod you and put you in positions to make certain choices, do certain things? Like, that gets crazy. I will tell you this, though. What made the George Floyd story so very different from any other case is that, one, we had videotape, but two, as a society, we couldn't come up with any alternative theory. So that's what I thought of. That's what I blanked out on, and I came back and remembered. You talk about your students. We don't know if he didn't. It's like we always want to have a reason to believe. We don't want to believe that there are evil, heinous people in the world, that when someone like us does something, there had to have been a reason why. Like you said, even if it's a little reason why, there has to be a reason why. George Floyd was the first time, I dare say, this is the first time ever in history that we could not come up with an alternative theory. And even when we couldn't, we still did. They started talking about his health. They started talking about, was he high? Trying to find an alternative theory. That is what we do when we see things happen to people. You shouldn't have been running. You shouldn't have reached. The young kid that just got shot, you know, why did he try to run? Like, there's always a reason why we try to justify behavior. And with George Floyd, I think it's the first time collectively that we all saw something, that we went through the gambit of alternative theories, and we just couldn't find one. And we just threw our hands up in the air and was like, okay, maybe this one was wrong. And that is exactly what we said. Maybe this one. Maybe there's something with this one.
Exactly, this one.
I think that is what feels disheartening. That is what's so very scary. That is what scares me for my son and other men that look like me and you. It's kind of like the feeling was, okay, there was something with this one. And like you said, this is our existence. We live this and we breathe this every day. I don't know a person of color that when they see police lights hit behind them, that they don't have a visceral response, a physiological visceral response, and they might not even be after you.
Listen, I think that I think about this too sometimes, and it's for me, it's like, man, I wish that I didn't even have that response. It doesn't have to be that I'm in a car. Like when I walk my dog and there's plenty of police officers around here, I know there's plenty of good officers, but the association, it's almost like a classical conditioning association with them. Like when I'm walking around here, I'm like, okay, let me just, you know, okay, make sure you don't look like anything could be going on. Or I'm thinking, why are there so many police officers here right now? Are they, you know, like all these things that I wish I didn't even have to think about.
Yeah. And that's, I think more so than anything, that's one of the things that I try to relay to my students is how, it's not like somebody's yelling and screaming the N-word at you on a day-to-day basis. It's all these little things that leave you exhausted at the end of the day. Why did you put my change on the counter like that? And to some hearing that may seem picky, but it's the little things that you experience every day on a day-to-day basis that you have to worry about, because we really just want to believe people having a bad day. Maybe you're just upset. You know, maybe you're worried about your kids and you're not thinking, and you know, we really truly want to believe people just having a bad day, but you always have that thought in the back of your head. I wonder why he got behind me. I wonder why he followed me. I wonder why he came down this aisle. Is he looking at me like I'm stealing? I wonder why he put my chains on. It's exhausting. And it's those little things, those little microaggressions, those little things that I wonder sometimes, you know, I wonder if people don't even know if they're doing them.
Yeah.
You know? And again, that's not to say that I think that we're all trained and ingrained to feel and think about each other in a certain way. And we've been trained and ingrained for so long and so often. We react and respond to each other. We react and respond to each other in ways we don't even know. And that is what scares me. I'm not worried about the open racist doesn't scare me. It's the person who doesn't know, who's trained and ingrained by videos or by TVs or by images or by all of these collective things that we see and that we've seen for years on TV and that we've seen in the media, that it's impossible for us to believe that these things haven't had an effect on our psyche in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and it doesn't manifest in our behaviors.
Right.
And that is, I think that that person scares me the most. That person scares me the most.
You know,
when they become a teacher, when they become a manager, when they become in law enforcement, when they become a principal, like when those people get in power who may be trained and ingrained. And and don't get me wrong, we all have our biases. You know what I'm saying? But there is a, that's what we're both trying to say, I think, is it goes above and beyond individuals. There is this entire power structure that is in play around us that we are all a part of, myself included, you included, that we don't, a lot of times we don't have these types of conversations and we don't know to think about it.
Right. And I think so many things to try to unpack there. Like, part of it is thinking about what's the most scary to me. I guess I would agree with that. And I also think on the second tier of most scary would be, and this is a new scary for me, would be somebody who thinks that they're woke but isn't really. And let me just preface that. Like, we're all a work in progress. I think the most scariest thing, the reason we can't have real, honest, blunt conversations is because people are scared of the word racist. I don't even use that word generally. I use bias, because that's what we all have. Like, if if you were to see my dog coming down the street and recognize my dog's color and size, then you have the ability for bias. And that's good, because your brain is going to tell you what you need to know. If you don't have the ability to differentiate between things, you wouldn't make it down the stairs when you walked out the building. Like, our brain needs those. That's an actual practical part of what we do in living and getting from one thing to the next. So to say, like, that you don't have it, or to think that it's fully shaped, is a mistake. So the other thing is the system things. You know, there's all the conversations, and they come from different sides of, like, well, you know, you're probably just oversimplifying that, or you don't see this, or you don't see that. And not recognizing that people influence systems. And all you have to do is go back, or you don't have to go back. I guess you can just go now. I mean, think about it. There's still first of lots of things happening this year. There's still first, oh, you're the first of this, you're the first of that. So if you think about prior to this, when decisions were being made, right? And this is one of the things I guess I learned later on in life, didn't really have a good grasp on why politics matter. But think about who was at the table to be the primary decision makers. Well, whoever was at the table to be the primary decision makers, they brought with them whatever was with them at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how things are ingrained in systems.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just sitting thinking about, again, when it happened, I was like, man, we got to talk about this Wednesday. And I didn't know if I was ready. And then you messaged me and was like, basically, are we ready to have this conversation? Because these emotions are so raw for all of us,
yeah.
For both of us and all of us. I don't know, man. I just think it's important for people to understand that this is not just a, you know, the problem. You know what I always say, that a lot of times it's hard to get people to speak up or fight for something if they're not directly impacted by it. It's hard to get people to fight for the kid on the other side of town, and my kids don't go to school over there and they don't have friends over there. You know, typically, if something doesn't affect me, people a lot of times won't move, or they don't understand why they should care. And I think that this issue that black people are talking about with law enforcement, it's not just a black people issue. Like, it's important that everybody understands, by listening to minority voices, it keeps all of us safe. You know what I'm saying? Like, it won't just keep black people safe. This ain't just about, this is about keeping everybody safe. You know what I'm saying? Like, but they don't, a lot of times people don't understand how they will benefit. How do I benefit from marching for George Floyd? I didn't know George Floyd. Because whether you're black or white or whoever, and you might be white and your kid may have tattoos or may have stereotypes, they might, you know, fighting for George Floyd may keep your kid safe one day. You know, all of this stuff comes full circle. All of our lives are connected and interconnected.
Yeah, and on that, right? So these things are different, but they're cut from the same cloth. So one thing that would bother me is, I think that going out and protesting is, there's lots of different avenues of change, you know, during civil rights and a lot of the different, I guess, protests around major issues we've had in the country haven't just been George Floyd. They've been there to kind of propel change. But if you're in a position where you can actually affect change outside of a protest, you go to a protest, but you don't go to your job and affect change outside of George Floyd, but related to these issues of equity, equality, and inclusion. If you're not having those conversations about how you can recruit, how you can get people at the table that are different, how you can have some of these different opinions so that can affect the system that which you work in, you know, your university, your wherever you work, then you're missing the opportunity that matters, that might matter more. There's some people that what they're doing with protests might be all that they can do, but there are other people that can do some other things and they might be neglecting where they can have the bigger impact.
Yeah, I think that's a complicated question. That's an entirely different show altogether. Because again, I always say that, you know, why would someone fight for diversity on their job when they could take a job away from me? They could take a job away from my cousin who's gonna apply. See, the issue is that people always feel like they're losing something. I told you, I had a student a while ago who said, we pray for those little kids on 9th Avenue every Sunday, but the fact of the matter is I'm not gonna create competition for my kids. And I've heard that over and over for years, this notion or idea that you just so happen to be black. I'm not going to create competition for my kids, no matter who you are. Like, and that's a theme that I hear a lot, is there is this fear. I mean, like I said, I do multicultural competency stuff all over the place, you know. And it's, I hear that whether it's here, whether it's in Jacksonville, whether it's in Washington, it doesn't matter. I hear the same thing no matter where I am. I'm not going to create competition for myself. Why would I do that? How does that serve me or help me in some way, shape, or fashion? And to be clear, again, I hate to have to say this, but we're not talking about every culture. We're not talking about all white people or anything like that. But that is a real concern that people have. So again, that's what I said. I think you're right. I think that, but that spirals into an entirely different conversation.
I just think that's so, that's real unfortunate. And I think where I'm coming from is not just about like race or ethnicity, but if you are not willing to diversify your team, you are basically saying that you don't want to grow. I mean, I was listening to one presentation, I may have mentioned it here, but it just comes back up now, where there was, it was a diversity, equity, and inclusion presentation. And she was talking about how she doesn't go to a couple malls in LA because where the restrooms are, they're in a place where it's kind of sketchy to go to the restroom. And, you know, no one wants to be sexually assaulted as they go to the restroom. And then when she looked up to see who was responsible for doing the architecture or putting that building together, it was a panel of just men. So what they may have lost is women customers, because they just didn't have that as part of their team, because they didn't think about that. It was the last thing they put in there. And this is just an example of, if you decide, if we were gonna make people just be apes, you're gonna just have squares, all squares, thinking about what you're gonna build and how you're gonna build it. Then what are you going to do about the circles and triangles and rectangles and all the other people that might want to be beneficiaries of your product? You're going to lose them.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
I get it. I get it. You're having different perspectives and different genders and different ethnicities. Like, it brings an array of talent and an array of intellect that everybody can grow from and evolve from and get better from. You know, and again, it's not to say everybody feels like that, but it's something that I commonly hear. I literally can on cue point and call when it's going to happen and when it's going to be said in the presentation. Mm. And it's that, but, you know, back to Chauvin. You know, I don't know if I want to call it progress. I have an appreciation that he was held accountable. I hope this doesn't turn into see the system works and they point to that one. And I, again, what we talked about earlier is the key, is I truly don't think that people understand for everyone George Floyd you see there are a thousand other brothers' names that you never hear, that never make the light of day, that never make TV. There are hundreds of thousands of people that you never hear about. And this isn't just some isolated event. And it's like, you know, we got the one bad apple, you know. And again, I don't even, I go back to systems. I think it's the system, you know. Maybe it's not the cops. That's, like I said, if there are any cops out there, God bless you. It's just, yeah. It is a hard job. And none of us probably will ever know what it's like for your husbands or wives, you know, to kiss you as you walk out the door and hope you come back home. So none of us can understand what that's like. You know, military families can understand what that's like, you know.
Yeah, like what I think about it, I mean, I'm hoping that all those officers out there do make it home, man. Like that's, that they're picking a job that not a lot of people want to do, man. You know, some of them are, they're seeing some of the worst situations.
Yeah.
But they do exist within a system.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I think that all we're asking is just to, it's not necessarily them. It's how do we examine this system to make sure that it functions in a respectable and healthy way, and those that have to do it, they can remain safe. That all parties can remain as safe as possible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
And people seem, hold on real quick, and for some reason, I just want to say real quick before you speak, for some reason, people seem offended by people asking for that. We're not, I mean, again, there is this extreme, and this is just my personal opinion. I think that it's extreme to say abolish the police. That's just my opinion. But I think people who are middle ground are just saying, hey, we just want the system examined to make sure that it's safe for all parties, that it's safe, right, that it's safe for the officers, and that the people who are being detained or who are being questioned or whatever the case may be are treated with dignity and respect. You know what I'm saying? Just examine the system. And for some reason, that in and of itself truly, truly bothers people.
Yeah. I mean, and acknowledging it. And the other thing is, I've had conversations with people who basically say some version of this. This is what I've heard. This is what I heard in my mind. Maybe they didn't say this directly. So are you for the police or are you against the police? Well, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, if I say that I don't want police just murdering people, then I'm against the police. I mean, that's it. Come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can be for both. Like, I'm for people not being murdered senselessly, and I'm also for police. Like, I'm for both. But I think the other thing is this history is important for people to recognize, look at it, and then actually, if you can take some time to do the history and see the history of the criminal justice system, the history of policing, the history of how it affects people of color disproportionately, all the way down to sentencing laws, bailing, all these things are things that you can look up and find out. But the other issue is when you create a rift between, or when a rift exists between law enforcement and communities of color, then that means you're making it hard for people to trust the ones that should be also there to protect them. Police officers are there to protect everybody, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's a hard thing too. Like, I mean, if imagine, it's maybe hard for some people to imagine, but if you have this association because of things you've seen in your community, and then you need to call a police officer for something, like, that's an uncomfortable situation to be in, where you feel like you need to be protected, or you need to, but you don't feel safe calling the one that's supposed to protect you. These are some reasons that we need to try to fix this thing.
Yeah. And this, I just got a text from a dear friend. I don't know if she wants me to say her name, but she said it's the same feeling as when her husband and her sons leave home and she's afraid, you know, just like police officers, their husbands and wives are afraid and they want them to come home. Well, if you are, she's saying basically if you're a black wife or a black mother, and when you see your sons and when you see your husband leave, you just have to hope and pray that nothing happens weird and they come home safely. And that's the thing is, man, this is having bad systems and isms, whether it be sexism or racism and just all these bad systems, like we all lose.
Yeah.
You know, you have black families. I get terrified to death every time my son leaves home. I really am, bro. I'm so terrified. It's unbelievable. He wants to stay out with his friends and it's getting dark and you know, and then just like she worries about her sons and husbands, the policemen, their wives are worried about them. Like just having bad systems, everybody loses. Whether you're white, whether you're black, Chauvin goes to jail. If he had kids, his kids not gonna see their daddy no more. George Floyd is dead. His kids ain't gonna see him no. Like bad systems, all of us lose. Whether you're black, white, or whoever, we all lose by not examining systems and making them and doing all of our parts to sort of make sure that they function in the best way possible. You know what I'm saying? Like that's something. Those out there that may not understand some of these experiences, if I were to say something to you, like that is something that I would like to relay. That is why we all should sort of be pushing and be motivated and be pushing for the same things and same perspective, you know.
Yeah.
You know, for the same things. I don't know, you know, it's good that accountability was found here. Let's just see what we move forward from here. Let's see how people react and respond. Let's see if they fall to the President Obama syndrome. Well, there it is. The system works, right? They caught him, you know? And it's so much bigger than one instance. And again, even then, I mean, look at what all had to happen. Like, we had to have a tape. He had to kneel on his... He had to be handcuffed, can't move... Kneeling on his neck for 9 months. I mean, for almost 9 minutes to finally get a conviction. Like, look at what all had to happen to get to a verdict. You know, that again, that in and of itself is a little bit scary. But I can speak for Dr. Chapman as well when I say this. We have to have ugly conversations. We have to have ugly conversations on this show sometimes. We ask that you have these conversations with your family and your friends. We have to have these conversations, make us think. We deliberate, they make us better. We can't be afraid to have these conversations with each other and with people at work and people you don't know, because truly the only way you will learn, that's a part of the reason why we started this show, was to hopefully give people a different perspective on life. You know, so have these ugly conversations, and they're uncomfortable and they're ugly. I may get a call tomorrow when I get to the office simply because we had this conversation. I hope not, but it's what it is. But if someone grows or evolves or at least hears a different perspective, then I think that we've done our job, but it can't just stop here when you turn your radio off or when you turn the stream off.
Yeah, I think those are important points. You know, when I sent you that text, like just thinking about this conversation or lots of conversations around it, it's taxing for me. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of energy just to put it out there. I think as I think about it a little bit deeper, I think, as much as, you know, we do a lot of talking here, I think in my own general life, I only talk like people really in my circle. But I think the other thing is, for me, I have experienced some level of, you need to filter what you say. Don't be too aggressive in how you say it. And make sure that you're not going to say stuff that will ruffle, that'll intensify the stereotypes that may exist.
Yeah.
And that was one reason I'm like, nah, we need to talk about it. We got to talk about it. You know, we got to use our platform, the platform that we have. Hopefully we keep it. But, yeah. You know, if you get to a table, you're not there just to eat. You're there also to help other people who might not be at the table yet eat.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird because when you contacted me, it was if you could read emotion in a text, it was almost like I knew you were saying, we got to talk about this. Even with asking me, are we ready for this? It was like, you know, we got to do this.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I wasn't worried because I know that we both always have good intentions and we're always very thoughtful in what we say. And again, hopefully this is something that we just want to spur other people out there to have these conversations about culture, about race, to hopefully give you a different perspective, another perspective. Because again, as we said before, if you're not black, you know, you conceivably could live a life and never know anyone intimately and really truly not understand these issues, really truly not understand why people complain and why people are fighting for equal education and why people are, you know, talking about policing and why they're talking about schools, because your kids don't go to school. Your kids may not go to school in their neighborhood. They may not have those experiences. And I've met a lot of people who truly just didn't get it because they didn't know anyone intimately to see it firsthand. What yeah. other cultures and what other people's kids go through, you know? So we hope that, you know, being here, that we've given people a different perspective, given people something to think about. And, you know, and it's important to understand that, like Dr. Chapman talked about, bias. We're biased. We're two black men in America. Those things, those experiences shape the way we see the world. And we've been shaped by our environments, and they shape the way we see the world. And a part of what we do every day, both of us, I can speak for him included, is every day we get up, we're fighting our biases to make sure that we are as fair as we can in the world. That we don't just, we try not to operate from our biases, but we try to remain balanced. We know that we are biased, so we try to check our biases in everything that we do. Because a part of what we do is we're in helping professions, we try to help people. So that's the first thing that we're taught, is to check your biases and check your perspective. So we hope that if there's anyone out there listening, and we're up on the hour, again, any law enforcement out there, we just want you to know we appreciate you.
We do.
We truly do. It is a hard, hard job. But we ask that everybody out there have these conversations with those around you. You know? And I guess leading out, as I always say, you know, make sure you're doing something that sets your soul on fire and make sure that the people that you love know you love them. And make sure you're living a life that you want to live. And don't take nothing to the grave with you. But I think, you know, just leading out, I just want everybody to be good to each other. All of us. It cost us nothing to be kind to each other. It cost us nothing to speak life into somebody just to say hello or to speak life into somebody else. And it really don't cost a dime just to listen. To listen and really hear. And I think listening and hearing, you don't necessarily have to agree with somebody to give somebody's words integrity. To me, when we're listening to you, when we're giving someone's perspective integrity, doesn't mean that I agree. It means that I respect the fact that you have a perspective and this is the way you see the world. And maybe I'm in a position that I can't see it or I can't understand it. And maybe I just don't agree. But I think that there's a way to have conversations that we can all respect each other and we can all give each other's perspectives integrity. That is just respecting the fact that you may see the world and experience the world from a different position than I do. And I think that that is a part of what is lost, is that I don't know if we know, if we all know how to do that for each other, because we're all operating from different perspectives and ideas in different places. So again, we always thank WMUL and Marshall for allowing us to have this platform. We appreciate all the things that the university and the radio station is doing to fight for diversity and inclusion, and allowing us the platform to have these difficult conversations, you know, to set a stage, to have these difficult conversations, to allow others in the community to think about some of these issues as well. So we definitely appreciate it. And as I always say, peace and blessings to everyone out there. And Dr. Chapman will take us out.
Yeah, so I guess I want to start out. I just want to thank all of our listeners as usual, but especially the listeners that are listening, and you don't totally agree with what you're hearing. I think just to be able to listen to it is good and is of value. In Discord and in intellectual conversations, there's not always going to be agreeance. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the family of George Floyd and all of the other families that have experienced some type of trauma similar to this, whether they lost a child to a situation like George Floyd's or something like the Khalif Browder situation and lost them to the prison system, or whatever the case may be. Those traumas are real. Recognize them, and recognize that these situations can be traumatizing. They re-bring up those traumas for you. I just would want to reiterate what Dr. Hinton was saying. You know, me and Dr. Hinton are good friends. We don't always agree on everything, but we're able to have some conversations. I think the essential part of any good relationship is that you can have, I don't want to just use the word honest, because honest doesn't mean throw hot fire on people, but you can have conversations where you can open windows of honesty and tell one how you feel, and then they can listen to how you feel. You don't necessarily have to agree, and then you can go back and forth, not necessarily sparring, just having a conversation. And I think as America, and I guess I'll just speak to America, even though I think it might be a world problem, we don't have those windows. We have them in certain communities. We have certain places where people can have conversations. But if America really wanted to grow, we would need to have uncomfortable conversations, and uncomfortable conversations include differing opinions. And that might even be different opinions around this race issue. But if we can have these conversations in a place where it's safe to have them, and people can acknowledge that there are other opinions, and other opinions don't necessarily have to be an attack on person, then that might be one step in the right direction. I think the other steps have to do with actually making changes. So I don't want to sound like a politician, even though I have thought about that more lately. But I think actually thinking about what you can do to get at a table. So it might not be a political table, but where are you at? What tables do you have access to? And what are you doing at that table? Whoever you are, it doesn't matter, you know, your race, gender, creed, but what are you doing at that table? If you happen to be one person, a person that's part of the majority, maybe you can be an ally. Maybe you can amplify somebody's voice that's not at that table. Or maybe you can be the one that brings that person in that's qualified, it just hasn't been seen because they don't have the right ally yet. There is something we all can do, whether it's making room for conversations or using our space at the table. Getting to the table is not about you eating. It's about providing an opportunity for other people to eat that aren't at the table. Peace and blessings. We'll see you all next week. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, cause I know you got a soul. Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing while the black man's sweating. In the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey.
You're on the station where every hour is commercial free. Marshall University's 88.1 WMUL FM, Huntington.